TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. Okay, go! Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chops. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim and producer Remus. Get us on and off the air like the experts that they are. Coming up on today's program in about 30 minutes' time, Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com is going to join us to talk about the Washington Capitals. At 1 o'clock from ESPNChicago.com, Jesse Rogers is on to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks. And then at 1:30 this afternoon, Sean Fitzgerald from the National Post is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Richard, Ezra, good morning. Good afternoon, rather, to both of you.
Good afternoon. We have a lot to talk about. It's great to be here again. It was a tough loss yesterday, but we've got three great guests, and we're going to do it up again.
I like that enthusiasm.
Before we start, Drew.
Yes.
Why do you get a preferential parking spot out back here at TSN 1290? I saw your car parked right by the door. Seems like that's a preferential treatment. We had to park a block down and walk to the studio.
I get what you're... It's actually, I parked in a loading zone behind the station is what I'm doing. I see what you're getting at there.
We're going to have to start calling you Drew Sheagle, that's for sure.
Exactly right. Anyways, last night's game in Tampa Bay. Let's start there. Unfortunately, we have to start there. It's amazing how things change in a week in the NHL.
Last night's game was so bad that I went to grab dinner during the intermission, and the Jets allowed two more goals.
In the intermission?
Yeah.
Wow.
The game was so bad yesterday that Richie actually took my calls on a Friday night.
That never happens. That's how bad the game was. Was that the worst game in the last year since the Jets have been back?
Yeah, Drew. It probably has to be. Last night's performance was laughable to me. And being down 6-0 halfway through the second period on the road, I don't care where you are. I don't care if you're playing in front of the fans here. Maybe that makes it worse. But if you're playing on the road, you don't have the fans. And I know it's the second half of a back-to-back, but you're flying, 45 minutes? That's an excuse. And this team, excuses, not that Claude Noel is using them, but if you look at it, you know, the same as last year, terrible on the road, back-to-back games. All those crutches that are available to them, they seem to take. And I guess my question and the theme for this show in terms of the Jets to me is somewhat rhetorical, but I'm leaving it open for the two of you to get in here as well. What is this team's identity? And are they an offensive squad that's going to trade chances? Or are they going to be a defensive squad? Or are they kind of a bit of both? To me, they don't have an identity. You know, what is it? And I don't see anything. And if I'm a Jet fan, I want to know one thing, and we've been talking about the show, and you talk about it with people outside the studio, and they're talking hockey with you, is does this team have any form of defensive system or buy-in mentality on the defensive side of the puck?
Well, we know they don't have any form in a penalty-killing system.
I just mean defense, though. I mean, they go on the road. What they allow total? 4 goals?
Yeah.
How many in Florida? It was 6 at the end of the end, right?
5. Yep. Was it 6 in Florida?
Yep.
Okay.
So 6, 4, and 18 goals. 18 goals in 3 games.
And 8 or 9 of them on the power play. Richie, I think the point you're trying to make is something that needs to be talked about. And I think, guys, you know, the Jets left for Montreal on Monday after the Islanders win in overtime. They come back now to Winnipeg, no points in 3 games, 1 game under .500. And you have to think that the team that we saw last year, the team that would give up 9 goals to Philly, mm-hmm. the team that on 2 occasions gave up 8 goals to Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. The team that completely melted down, to me, this team on this road trip looked like the 2011-2012 Jets. And I tweeted that, and I think that's a really disturbing trend. The Jets have a different squad this year. Not only, you know, of course, they picked up Olli Jokinen, they picked up Alexei Ponikarovsky, they got some size at center, size on left wing. The Jets now in the Big Bad Eastern Conference are a big team, and that's good. And I think when we covered the team over the summer and throughout, you know, going into the lockout, we agreed that, okay, it's good that they picked up size, but the problem is you still haven't fixed the fundamental issues with the team. And the fundamental part, not fundamental problems with this team, they still take too many penalties, too undisciplined, and they're still having breakdowns all over the ice.
I want to talk about all these things, and we're going to do that throughout the course of the show. I want to talk about specifically last night.
Yep.
Let me ask you this question. Did the Jets go start that game knowing they had no chance of winning?
No.
Did they go in with that mentality?
No, of course
they did. Did they go into that game thinking, we've already lost?
No, and if they did, then we're this is a whole show. This is a summit show, because if that's the mentality of this team, then you might as well have not even, you know, you better not even play the games. But without Zach Bogosian, you know, Bogosian's been out the whole season, and he's going to be out for another probably 3 to 4 weeks. No Dustin Byfuglien, and we're not quite sure what his injury is, but it's a lower body injury. You have two of your best defensemen, if not your two best defensemen, are not in the lineup. So now you've got two rookies playing top minutes. You've got Zach Redmond in his second game, and you've got Paul Postma, who's only playing his 8th career game. And he had 3 points, and that's fine. But you're going up against the best offensive team in the NHL. I don't think the mentality was that they couldn't win.
And
but
everything you have said is 100% correct, but you know what what it also is? It's an excuse.
That's right.
Everybody in the league has these injuries, and you rarely see a team be down 6-0. And I know they took the majors and everything else, yep. But like you said, Where's their professional pride in that game last night?
And Paul Postma's 3 points. You can take him, throw him in the garbage. I don't care who gets points when you're down 6-0.
Right. When you're down, yeah. That's window dressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's window dressing. You know, that's putting lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but where's your professional pride? I didn't think they were going to win last night.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, the odds were too stacked against them. They were undermanned and everything else.
Sure.
And that's, I'm fine with them losing.
Mm-hmm.
But where is your pride in at least showing up? You know, and I honestly thought, part of me thought that, yeah, they're going to lose. But this isn't the same team as last year that would have rolled over immediately at the start of the game. They have enough professional, true NHLers that have been through the NHL wars to say, we have enough pride, we might lose, but we're going to go down swinging. And they didn't even swing once.
But back to Richie's point, Drew. About the team's identity, when you know that you've got no Bogo and you've got no Buff going into the game, and Buff is a huge part of their offense and obviously a huge part of their defense, that goes back to the identity. And if you want to have a chance to win that game, you're not going to open it up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that's mm-hmm. pretty much what they did.
So you have to buy in on the defensive side.
Absolutely.
And every single player from top to bottom, forward or defenseman, has to buy in on the defensive side of the ball, of the puck, of the defensive side of the game. And none of them did. None of them did. I don't know what they were out for a Sunday skate at the River Heights Community Center while playing shinny.
Four goals allowed against the Islanders as well. So what do you want to make that 22 goals over the last four games?
Right.
And by the way, by the way, Drew, you have Montoya had played one of those games, obviously played a little bit last night, but Pavlik's in net, and he has been playing very poorly.
Yep.
Blame needs to also be shifted to the team, but he's been playing very poorly in any event. And we're going to talk about the penalty kill. I want to talk about the penalty kill next segment.
Okay.
But you talk about buy-in. And, you know, Bogosian's out. We know Bogosian's out. I mean, Byfuglien's missed 2 games, guys. Bogosian's out. Well, isn't PK Subban, hasn't he been out in Montreal?
Right.
Hasn't Pacioretty been out for the last couple games?
Yeah.
You still play. And you know what? If you're going to come up with these excuses, that's great. But that gets back to the buy-in defensively. If you don't have the horses on the back end right now, then you got to buy in. And maybe it means holding your center or your third forward up higher than usual, or even having another guy a little bit higher and going off a transition and trapping a little bit more based on your talent that game. But is there an identity? And I honestly don't know. If you were to ask many other people in this league, you know, what is the Jets' identity? What do you think? They'd probably say, can put up some points on the board, loose defensively, don't really play with any sort of...
And agreed with all that, and I think the worst thing they would say, weak mentally. This is a weak team in the mental side of things. As soon as they see adversity, they start grabbing onto the excuses, like you said, and using them as a crutch. We lost 8-3, and yeah, we were down 6-0, but no buts. Nobody cares about the buts. People care about how do you respond in the face of adversity, and so far, we have not seen any response whatsoever. If you're facing a bully, punch that bully in the face, and we haven't seen it once.
I think you mentioned the mentality of the Jets, and again, people might disagree with me. If you listen to the show that we did last Sunday, I correctly predicted Alexander Burmistrov would have a breakout game against the Islanders. I'm not making this up. You asked me who to look for, and I said Burmy, and I think I was right. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but again, just to show that I'm balanced and level headed. Burmistrov should not be scooping the puck lacrosse style when they're down 4 goals. And you can say that it takes a lot of talent and ingenuity to do that, but you're hot dogging it, and that's not what you should be doing. I think this team is somewhat lost when they go on the road.
That's the consensus. I actually don't mind because it created an opportunity, Ezzy. Created a scoring opportunity when they're down 4-0, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. But I can see your point.
When you have to resort, I mean, it almost worked. So, you know, I can't fault the guy for it almost working.
Did it almost work?
Yeah, he almost scored. Lindbeck had to be sharp there. Given everything else that was going on in the game, I mean, besides that lacrosse play, you didn't have any. There was no evidence that they were going to do anything if he had gone with a sort of basic fundamental hockey play.
Yep.
There was nobody around the net that was going to be ready for a pass or a shot or anything.
2 points. I mean, one is Lindbeck is 6'7".
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fine. You're right. You're playing against a goaltender who's massive.
And the play is also difficult to pull off because if you put the puck above the crossbar,
it's no goal.
Right. So
because it's a high stick. Right. I know. It's a desperate play. And it's not a play that a good team would ever make.
I don't know, Drew. It's not
your first option on a good team. You got the puck. You have control of the puck behind your opponent's net. How many teams in this league, how many of the good teams in this league
how many times
would resort to a lacrosse-style attempt?
Maybe, but how many? Well, two things.
How many times has that move ever worked in the NHL? 5 times, maybe a handful of times?
And I'm not killing Burmistrov for trying it. I don't mind the attempt, but I don't think it's emblematic of a good team that attempts that.
A, how many guys can even pull it off? And B, to me, did he create a scoring chance or nothing?
Did.
And he did.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it.
I don't mind it, but it shouldn't be your first option. If you go, I know, and I'm not Alex Burmistrov, obviously, but you go into his head, well, he's obviously thinking, I don't have any other option at this point in time. I can't pass this puck out front. I don't have any teammates who are available or in a position where they can capitalize on this opportunity.
It's also once people pick, it's a play you can only pull off very rarely because if you play hockey and you know and you try moves like that, you know, screwing around outside and stuff, when you try that move more than once or twice, all the other team does is just tap your stick because once they tap the stick, the balance of the puck is gone and he flies off. So it's a play that you won't see him use more than once or twice a year.
Right. And I don't think, I mean, it's an attempt, but it doesn't strike me as an attempt that a good team would ever try. Let's go to break. We'll continue on. We're continuing discussing the Jets and what has been a pretty poor week for them. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. A proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. In 2 short appointments, you can get your own custom-fitted mouth guard and give yourself peace-of-mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or find them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You need one of those to play these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what's the number one fear? of any parent or anybody that's playing a sport. It's concussions. Mm-hmm. And mouth guards go a long way in helping to prevent concussions. And if you get a big hit, you know, you bite down on your tongue, mm-hmm. things of that nature. Mouth guards prevent all that. It's really an essential part of your hockey equipment.
It is essential.
And also soccer and football and yep. basketball, anything that potentially involves contact, you must wear a mouth guard for it nowadays.
When Richie and I coached a couple of years ago, we would always make sure that all of the kids had their mouth guards in, because what they'll do now in minor hockey is they'll give you a penalty right. if they see you. What a lot of kids do now, which I don't like that they learn from the pros, is they have their mouth guards out of their
just
mouths
dangling,
and they're chewing
yeah.
on it and all that. But no, it's absolutely essential in this day and age to have that.
And Ezzy, you can get one of those and help with your snoring problem.
That's true.
Apparently it does help with your snoring.
It does.
As opposed to Gary Lawless, who also has, I think, snoring issues, and they've ridiculed me on their show on Hustler and Lawless. Apparently, he has this machine, and you wear this mask.
It's the sleep apnea machine.
Yeah, I don't want to have a mask and a machine.
You need a mask as well. You need a mask, and you need a mouth guard, and you might even need a muzzle. We just might get you a muzzle. It'd probably be the best case scenario at that point.
Well, it doesn't help that I go to bed with food on my chest, so.
Jets penalty kill.
It's pretty bad.
Is there a word better than atrocious for it?
No.
Drew, it's below 60% through 8 games.
It's the worst in the league.
Yeah. It might be the worst in history.
But last year, just point this out, okay, last year, I mean, this is what I wanted to get at. They were 24th in the league in penalty kill. They were 80.1% over an 82-game season. So the question is, I mean, let's go from, we're going to look at this from Claude Noel's perspective, then we're going to look at this from Chevy's perspective.
Okay.
Claude Noel comes into the season and he wonders, okay, what did I get? What players do I have that are different from last year that can maybe be help me on the penalty kill?
Yep.
Rolly Okunin, no. Ponikarovsky, well, I guess if that's my last resort, I have to use him.
He has been used penalty killing on New Jersey and other teams.
Yep. Yes, but I mean, he's not a top PK guy.
No. Nope.
And so the point is, you know, if you're Noel, well, you know, it's 24th in the league last year. I haven't really got anything personnel-wise that would make me better on the penalty kill, and then I lose Bogosian for the first bit of the season. That hurts on the PK. So hold on.
Yep.
So you look at it from that perspective, and you say, okay, well, they brought in Perry Pern, so maybe his experience and scheme and all those things will help.
Yep.
And you look at it from Chevy's perspective is, you know, you got to get the players going. There's certain things buying into this to killing penalties, and I provided you with more experience in terms of Perry Pern and in terms of scheming and things like that. And you have, you know, there's three assistant coaches, and there's a lot of players here who can kill penalties, or maybe that's what he thinks. In any event, this is the point. There's a couple problems. I mean, the first problem is from an outside perspective is you didn't address a need this summer, which was penalty killing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't get anybody who's really good penalty killer. So in defense of Noel, it's, you know, how do you
expect anything to change if you keep bringing me the same assets?
And Perry Pern's perspective, it's at least an interesting question. I mean, does it take time to buy into the system, or is it the personnel? And then we can debate that all day. I mean, personnel is obviously more important in my opinion. System does matter. But one of the things I'm really noticing from the Jets' penalty kill, and you know what? I don't want to hear any more about this. Don't take penalties. I mean, we know that. It's the actual penalty kill itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they do take penalties now, by the way.
Yeah, I know they take penalties, but I'm saying, you know, that's the way to get rid of the penalty kill problems is don't take penalties. Yeah, I know. But every team takes penalties, so let's deal with what they do when they're taking penalties. I looked at, I thought, okay, you know, Brian Little's playing. He plays about a minute on the penalty kill.
Second unit.
Yeah. Second unit, and, you know, he plays, to me at times, he doesn't look so good many times. I thought, you know, how many times has Brian Little blocked a shot this year? Like, even yesterday, the puck gets through, he's just playing goalie like that. You know, how many times have they blocked a shot? Has Brian Little blocked a shot? He plays a minute a game on the penalty kill. There's been 8 games so far. How many block shots, Drew, do you think Brian Little has?
Two?
One.
Okay, I was optimistic.
You know,
that tells me he's not a penalty killer.
Well, it depends. I mean, it tells me a lot of things. First of all, it tells me that you might have to change up personnel on the PK.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Grant Klitsam going out there. And I mean, Grant Klitsam, all due respect to Grant Klitsam, when they get Bufflin back, I think it might be time to split up Stewart and Hainsey, put him on the left side and play him with Postma and Redmond, get Redmond some more time. Klitsam hasn't impressed me. But the point is, the forwards on the PK playing off, and the shots are getting through left and right. That's like Kovalev's goal the other night. I mean, come on. I think it was Antropov. Antropov was about 3.5 feet away from Alexei Kovalev. Alexei Kovalev is one of the best stick handlers and shooters you're ever going to see. The guy hasn't been able to skate faster than my grandmother
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday
to her,
by the way. 91st birthday.
Baba Toots, very well deserved happy birthday shout out.
A former rival. I think it's still a rival of Gary Lawless. I'm not sure if they've made.
Well, at least Gary picks his fights with people that are of the same ability as him.
but the point is, this is the Kovalev goal on I guess it'll be Thursday. Okay, yeah. So Andropov's 3.5 feet away from him. Alexei Kovalev cannot skate around you. He can hardly skate at the NHL level anymore. What does he do? Just plays off of him. What does Kovalev do with his wrist shot? Top corner. I mean, what is that? Have you read the scouting report? No. Do you have a willingness to get in front of the block, the shot, or go take the body? And if you don't, then get off the PK. But there's a lot of problems with it. And personnel is a factor. Scheme is a factor. Overall effort's a factor. And I need to see the changes. And wholesale changes don't bother me.
How much of a penalty kill is like defense in basketball, where it really relies on a team buying in? It's about a team commitment to the PK.
It has a lot to do with that, Drew. But I want to add to what Richie's saying, and I agree with Richie. The penalty kill is a huge problem right now. After the first three or four games, it wasn't bad, but on this road trip, I mean, it was atrocious. Whatever synonym for bad you want to use, go ahead and use it. But Richie brought this up on Illegal Curve last year during the first Jets season. You got to get the good players out there on the penalty kill. You have to get Evander Kane out there. And this is a thing that we could talk to Chuck Gormley about. Alexander Ovechkin does not play on the penalty kill for the Capitals. The Capitals have been taking a lot of penalties. And what happens? Ovechkin sits on the bench and he doesn't get into a good flow of the game. To me, I'm looking at it, and you guys know the GST line, I love him. But this year they've been using Jim Slater and Chris Thorburn. By the way, I think Jim Slater is our best penalty killer. But
you're sort of paying. That's part of the thing. Reason you're paying Jim
you're
Slater
paying Jim,
to be your.
You're paying
to be
Jim
good,
Slater for that. He blocked shots, right. Even though he has less than I thought he had. He only has four, but he blocked a shot yesterday, and you could see that he was. If anybody was watching the game, he hurt his leg. But you got to get Evander Kane out there. You got to get Blake Wheeler out there. You got to get guys.
You're saying play your
best players
in all
absolutely.
Situations.
Evander Kane played 14 minutes yesterday.
I don't mind having set players for certain situations. If they are performing, and if they are not performing, then you try something different. And that's the point I think Ezzie's trying to make here. If Slater and Thorburn were killing penalties left, right, and center, and you leave Slater on the PK. Thorburn hasn't really done much to me to keep a spot. No. The point is, then you know what? Then you do throw those guys out, especially if you're taking a lot of penalties, to Ezzie's point as well, and they're logging 14, 15, 16 minutes of ice time. You want to get those guys in the flow of the game. And the guys who are the best players are generally the smartest. They skate well. They can read the play. All those things go, the smartest and read the play go hand in hand. But what's the problem with using something like that?
I don't disagree with you guys whatsoever. It makes sense to play your best players in all situations.
You're going
to
wear them down, and I know it's a shortened season. But I'm saying is when you're taking a lot of penalties and it's not working, what you're doing is not working. It doesn't hurt to change it up.
The Chicago Blackhawks use Jonathan Toews on their penalty kill. Why can't the Jets use Evander on the penalty kill?
I think they're slightly different players, but I agree with your point. I mean, your best players should be your best players in all situations. And it's one thing if that player is really already putting in a lot of minutes because it's, a rare penalty kill. But in last night's game, when you're on the penalty kill for that entire time, with the entire first period, I mean, Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler have no chance to get into the flow of the game in that first period. Never mind the fact that it was already over by the time the first period was done. At the 4-0 lead or 3-0, whatever it was.
Drew, you mentioned systems, and I think I speak for everyone when I say that we all have respect for Perry Pern, and I think he was a great hire. But I think some of it has to fall on Claude Noel and also the decisions he's making, because like Richie said, you guys know how much I love Chris Thorburn, and he got into a fight in Montreal and really got his team back into it. But there are other options for them to use on the penalty kill. That it's as simple as that. They have to look at that. They have to at least consider it.
I think it will take time for the team to fully understand Perry Pern's penalty kill system. I do believe that probably does take some time to get it operating at the perfect level. But unfortunately, in this 48-game season, you don't have that luxury. You don't have that luxury to struggle on the penalty kill for 10 games until you learn the system. So to counteract that while you are at the same time learning the system, I think you have to do other things and perhaps make it more difficult on play your better players in that situation to make it more difficult on the other team while your regular penalty killers, quote-unquote, are learning the system.
Well, your first line is Wheeler, Jokinen, and Kane, and they're combining for 4 seconds of power penalty kill time again combined. And you look at their overall ice time, and you know they're logging 18, 17, and 18 minutes a game. So you can throw them a minute or two on the PK. It's not even going to get them up to 20.
Right. And it's not like they're so, horrible defensively that it's going to be that big of a detriment. It's not like they're atrocious or anything.
Kane is not a bad defensive player, in my opinion. I mean, he's not a tremendous defensive player. He's not awful. Jokinen has certainly improved under his time with Brent Sutter in Calgary.
That was the big thing that they talked about when they signed Brent Sutter. Pardon me, he signed Olli Jokinen, is how he plays. He plays the entire length of the ice now. When previously in his career he didn't. So there are options here for the Jets aside from having the world's worst penalty kill.
I mean, it's 8 games and below 60%. It's embarrassing.
It is. Let's see if they improve it. Let's go to break. When we come back, Chuck Gormley from Comcast Sportsnet in Washington is going to join us to talk about the Southeast Division Washington Capitals. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Chuck Gormley, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, Chuck. Chuck, the Capitals are off to a bit of a slow start. Some might be able to attribute that to Adam Oates being their third different head coach in the last calendar year. When you look at Adam Oates' coaching style and the previous head coach, Dale Hunter's coaching style, how completely different are the two styles?
Well, the one thing that Dale Hunter really stressed when he became coach here was block and shot, sitting back, playing sound defensive hockey, which is something the Capitals, as you guys know, have never been known for. So that was a big adjustment for this team, especially for a guy like Alex Ovechkin. Ovi said when it's midway through the season, I feel like a plumber out there. But if he wants me to be a plumber, I'll be a plumber. Well, of course, nobody in the NHL wants Alex Ovechkin to be a plumber. And when they were eliminated after the second round, Dale Hunter decided to walk away, which is unusual for any NHL coach. But when he did, the Caps had an intensive search, and when they decided on Adam Oates, a big reason was because of the way he played the game. He wants the Capitals to play just like the Devils, and that's what they're doing right now. It's taking some time, but it's slowly falling into place.
Chuck, you mentioned Alex Ovechkin. I mean, a couple of years back, people debate Ovechkin, Crosby. It's come to a point now where that's not really a conversation if Crosby's healthy. What is Alex Ovechkin February of 2013?
We were just talking with Adam Oates about that. And, what Oates is saying is that Alex has to recognize that there's more to his game than scoring goals. And I think he's always defined himself by scoring goals, and that's what happens when you score 65 when you come into the league. But I think there are parts of his game that Adam Oates thinks he can draw out of him. And that's playing, some defense, playing the body. And a lot of that we saw in that Boston series last spring where, Alex didn't dominate offensively, but he took on Dennis Seidenberg, he took on Zdeno Chara, and he was a very effective player in that series. And I think that's something that the Capitals want to see more of out of him. The big hits, and not necessarily 50 goals. I'm not sure if we're going to see that again from him.
Chuck, last night against the Philadelphia Flyers, big defenseman John Erskine caught Wayne Simmonds with an elbow. I think the last thing that we heard was that there was going to be a hearing with the NHL about whether or not John Erskine will be suspended. Are you hearing that he will be suspended, and do you think he should be suspended for that hit on Wayne Simmonds?
Well, I think we're going to hear the news on that probably within the next hour or two. I believe he has a 2 p.m. hearing with Brendan Shanahan over the phone. I do think he'll get a suspension. He does come up high with the elbow. He's a a very physical player, but he's also been very clean throughout his career. He's never been suspended, and I think that's why it won't be a long suspension. I would say maybe 2 to 3 games. That's what I would expect. Peter Laviolette said that he thought it was a dirty hit after the game, but you're almost always going to get that from an opposing coach. But like I said, he's not a dirty player, so I think that'll definitely play a role in this. And the fact that Wayne Simmonds didn't come back in the game, he has a head injury, and Paul Holmgren told us last night he has a bit of a whiplash. So he probably won't be playing for the Flyers today, and that might weigh into it as well. So I'm thinking 2 to 3 games.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Chuck, prior to you coming on, we were just discussing the Winnipeg Jets and what we see as their lack of an identity. Are they an offensive team? Are they a defensive first team? That sort of thing. You know, in your estimation, what is the identity of the Washington Capitals?
They are also working on that. And I think any team that has a new coach in a 48-game season is going to struggle with forming an identity quickly. I think that's certainly the case here. This team, like I mentioned, they're going to be the New Jersey Devils. I mean, that's the system that Adam Oates is installing here, and they want hot on the puck, pressure, pressure, pressure all over the ice. And essentially, that's what got the Devils to the finals last year, and it really what got Los Angeles the Stanley Cup. So I think they've got the right idea. The age-old question is, can you teach a system to players who aren't used to playing that kind of system? And I think you can. I think it doesn't matter who you have in your lineup. I think Oates and Peter DeBoer proved that in Jersey with Ilya Kovalchuk. People say he had his best overall season last year, even though his goal totals weren't the highest of his career. He played an overall game that was probably maybe the best of his career, and I think that's really the work that they have with Alex Ovechkin right now. Mike Ribeiro was a nice addition to this team. So I think it's going to take time. An identity for a team does take time, and I think the Devils, if you look at them last year, they were, I think, 12-12-1 after 25 games and then played over 20 games over 500 after that. So that's a team that I think you'll see the Capitals try to model themselves after.
Chuck, you mentioned Mike Ribeiro. He was a big acquisition this offseason, and he leads the team right now with a point a game. Has that point total been an accurate reflection of his play thus far?
I think he's been one of their best players, if not their best player. He's really drawing. He's great at drawing defensemen to him or forwards to him and finding an open man. And he was playing with Alex Ovechkin last night, and Oates thought Alex's game was the best of the season. So I think that has something to do with it. I think Ribeiro was itching to play with Ovechkin because he had some ideas on areas of the ice he'd like to find him. And I think he's been a great addition, and it's something that they really needed coming off last season. They needed that number two center. There was going to be no drop-off from Nick Backstrom, and there hasn't been. And he's a great power play guy, too. So I think he's got a lot of assets, and he's also playing for a contract. So you know that's going to boost his numbers.
Chuck, I wanted to ask you about Troy Brouwer. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league, and as you know, he played a significant role with the Chicago Blackhawks when they won the Stanley Cup. Is he really one of the big leaders of this team, especially with Brooks Like out of the lineup?
I think he is. I think he's a leader on the ice. He's a leader in the dressing room. He says all the right things. So, yeah, I think he is a type of player that needs to score goals, but he's a physical presence. And between he and Troy Brouwer, who's really been a revelation, I think they found a couple power forwards that can really help this team.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Chuck, we just mentioned Brooks Like. You know, he's been out of the lineup since the start of the year. What is his injury status, and when do the Capitals expect to see him return to their lineup?
Well, he did practice today. He's practiced for the last couple days, and that's a good sign. It looks like he's coming along pretty well. He's got what they're saying is a lower body. We believe it's a groin injury that occurred when he was in Switzerland. That happened quite a long time ago. but I think he kept trying to play on it or at least skate on it before the end of the lockout, and it wasn't really progressing. So I think they shut him down for a while, and he's skating again. I would say within a week for sure, if probably not tomorrow, but maybe Tuesday against Toronto or Thursday in Pittsburgh.
And Chuck, and based on your Twitter, it looks like Braden Holtby is making his first start tomorrow.
Yes, we just learned that today, which is not much of a surprise, but significant in the fact that Michael Neuwirth played really well for five straight games, didn't really get the results, but played well enough to keep them in the game as they were trying to get a hold of this system. And Braden Holtby came in and played a solid game yesterday, not a you know, spectacular game, but I think it's significant in the fact that he is the guy that they wanted to take the number one job. They wanted him to kind of roll off of that momentum from last year's playoffs. And they're going right back to him, which is nice. I mean, he missed five straight games while Neuwirth was in there. So they're different goalies. Holtby plays the puck a lot more, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that from the Capitals, which we haven't seen in the past.
Final question, Chuck. George McPhee's obviously been the GM for a long time in Washington. Is he going to let this team, you know, the team that's currently assembled, be the squad for the foreseeable future? You know, he has a new coach trying to install a new system, as you mentioned. Or is he going to be looking to make a fairly significant move, do you think, prior to the deadline?
That's a good question. I guess a lot depends on how they play up until the deadline. He's a very patient GM, and even though he didn't fire two coaches, he only fired one with Bruce Boudreau last year. But like you guys said earlier at the top of the show, that, you know, they've had three coaches. But I think when it comes to player personnel, he's going to be patient with this team, see how they learn this system, see how well they play with it. And as we get closer to the deadline, I see him, if there's a need, actually I think there's two needs on this team. One is a solid blue liner, not necessarily top four, but definitely a number five. I think they lack that. And I think a goal scorer. I mean, it's probably the same on every GM's list, but they could use a goal scorer behind that Ovechkin line. I'm not sure if Troy Brower and Joel Ward are going to continue at the pace they're at now with four and three goals. But I think with Alex Semin gone, they are missing that. And I think that's something that might be addressed. And if they can find somebody that you know, has some life left in them, they'll go that route.
Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Chuck. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Big thank you to Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty can be reached at 230-6129. One more time, David Carr of Monopoly Realty for all your real estate needs, 230-6129. Gentlemen, Winnipeg Jets have three games on the schedule the week ahead.
Yep.
All three are at home, where it's a Jekyll and Hyde sort of team usually. Tuesday against the Florida Panthers, Thursday against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then next Saturday afternoon, which means we're on at 7 a.m. next Saturday, that's against the Ottawa Senators.
That game's in Ottawa, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know.
It's at home.
Pardon me. I meant on the road, yes. I meant that, yeah, that's the, because they believe they play four of the next five at home, and that's the one road game, if I'm not mistaken.
We're not going to hold it against you. I'm here to make you look good.
Thank you, Ezzy. I appreciate that, as always. Anyways, obviously it's been a terrible week for the Jets. It's really the only word you could use to describe it. It's been a terrible week. Do you think that they bounce back starting Tuesday, Thursday against two teams that I would think the Jets internally would say we're better than?
You have to, Drew. So, I mean, will they is a question we'll delve into in a second. But you have to, because if you look at the losses the Jets have incurred so far this year. It's been against Ottawa, Montreal, Florida, and Tampa, and really all teams that you need to compete with for the playoff spots. Ottawa, Montreal for those final few playoff spots, and Florida and Tampa for the same, but also because it's an in-division game. So these games are, Florida game is even more important, but Toronto as well. I mean, the Jets can't think they're any better than Toronto. Talent-wise, they are. I think they're better than both teams, frankly. But in this, in the 82-game season, it's so tight. So a 48-game season, it's even tighter. I think they probably bounce back against Florida. I mean, they have a lot to prove. The fans are going to have expectations far higher than what the level that the Jets will perform at a far higher level, excuse me, than they did on the road trip. So I think Florida, they come back, I think they play well. I think the question for me is, how do they, if they do play well, then what happens? Do they get complacent again, or do they stay focused? And then you go to Ottawa, and look at the next three games. And as you'll lead into this one, if you look at, Ottawa doesn't have threats anymore. So the next three games, really this stretch was something that the Jets had to take advantage of. Now they're 3-4-1, and 500 isn't 500 anymore.
Not
we
right.
know that. So it's worse than that. And this next four-game stretch is not a difficult stretch, guys. A three-game stretch, is not a difficult stretch, really. And I know Ottawa's played well, and I know they beat the Jets, and I know Craig Anderson's looked good. But no Spezza, one of the top players in the league. Toronto doesn't really have anybody who would cause any concerns, and you can,
and Lupul's injured, they have issues of their own,
and Florida, so I mean, you really don't have any snipers coming into town or you're not visiting any snipers. This is really a nice three-game stretch for the Jets to try and get back on track. If they stumble through this stretch, it's going to be an uphill battle all season,
especially because the week after, I mean, they have two home games, but Philly and Pittsburgh come to town, so those are certainly not games that those are two teams that are better than you are. So you really, in the next three games, minimum 2-1?
Minimum.
You gotta take care of business on home ice against two opponents that you're better than. And the Ottawa game, Ottawa, I think, is still better than the Jets, and they've had the Jets' number since the Jets have returned to the NHL. But, I mean, like you said, no Jason Spezza, so that is certainly a humongous void in the Senators' lineup.
Well, Drew, if you look at the condensed schedule that we have, coming up here, February is probably the most unbalanced schedule, because you've got the Jets have five of their next six games on the road, but then they're going to go on that five-game road trip in the eastern states against Buffalo, Carolina, Philly, New Jersey Rangers at the end of February, which is going to have huge ramifications for the first half of the season on their record. If they're able to pick up, have 6 points on that road trip, that's going to go a long way in setting it up for March. But March and April, it's pretty balanced. You've got a pretty balanced schedule. There isn't, a 6 or 7 game homestand or a 6 or 7 game road trip. But this is huge. I mean, you've got 3 days off here, and I assume the Jets will be back in town. If not already, they'll be back later today.
They're back. I mean, these guys don't stay away.
Right.
I promise you, they weren't getting a day off in Florida after
they
last
weren't sur- they no, weren't surfing in Fort Lauderdale.
They took a day off in Florida. It was last night's game,
exactly.
And then they took off.
That's pretty accurate. No, but
they'll be back on the ice certainly tomorrow, and I expect they'll be skating a fair bit.
Yeah, fair enough. And Florida and Toronto coming up, I think these are winnable games, and I still think the Jets can compete with the Florida Panthers, and they've got injury troubles of their own. I think Jovanovski's coming back after suffering I think it was a knee injury, but they've had issues of their own. But Florida outplayed the Jets on the road, and when you've got a couple days to practice and stop, and it's almost desperation sinks in, and they won't say that, but you've erased a 3-1-1 start now, and now you've fallen out of the playoff picture. And even though it's only 8 games into the season, I mean, it's only a 48-game season. You're at the point where you have to win these games. They have to win both of these home games.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. Gary Lawless had a good tweet, I thought, earlier today I saw. He said, when you lose three in a row in this condensed season, it's like losing five, six in a row. I mean, because it's one thing to lose three in a row. It's another thing to lose clean three in a row. You didn't even take 1 point.
Well, what about what Richie was talking about? Drew, about the Panthers now, so they play Panthers 2 out of their 3 games, right?
Yeah.
And you were successful in the Southeast Division last year, but now you've dropped back-to-back games against the Panthers and Lightning. You can't give the Panthers another 2 points.
No, you can't.
Because you're going to be competing with them for a playoff spot. Tampa Bay is the best team in the division right now.
Tampa Bay's won this division as far as... from what I saw of Tampa Bay yesterday, from what you saw from Tampa Bay, what you've seen from them throughout the course of this year so far, I don't see how, barring injury, they've lost. They don't win this division.
The two you pick, Carolina.
I'm aware it's an error in judgment. You can laugh all you want, says the guy who picked Chicago to miss the playoffs. Miss the playoffs. They haven't lost the game yet.
I said it knowing that I would get that back from you.
Oh, sure you did. Likely story.
By the way, Timmy, can we count how many times over the next 3 months that Drew brings that up to throw Richie under the bus?
Well, like, you wouldn't expect anything different.
Yeah, no,
but,
it's all
I
good.
Mean, Tampa Bay looks to have won this division at this point in time. I mean, I know anything can happen. I know they can suffer some injuries. But if they stay relatively healthy, they're by far the best team in the division.
This team was good last year with poor goaltending. But Anders Lindback, even though he's not, I wouldn't say he's a top five or maybe even top 10 goalie, he gives them adequate goaltending, mm-hmm. better than Dwayne Rolison last year. And Corey Conacher, I was watching him yesterday. I mentioned him briefly before the season started. He was one of the top players in the AHL last year. He's 22 years old, coming into the NHL a little bit late. He reminds me a lot of Steve Sullivan, just a fast player, good hands, and he's obviously excelling, had two goals yesterday. But you had Corey Conacher's mm-hmm. secondary offense. You've got such a deep team. Victor Hedman looks better than he did last mm-hmm. year. But I right now, Tampa Bay definitely looks like the best team in that division.
They have 37 goals for, which leads the entire NHL. And their second closest opponent is 5 goals behind. You know who that second closest opponent is?
Winnipeg?
Winnipeg. The Jets have scored the second most goals in the NHL. Unfortunately, they've also given... No, I read that wrong. You're right. I'm sorry. I flipped around my numbers there. Carry on as you were.
I think you're talking about goals against.
San Jose's got to be
goals against. I read my columns incorrectly. Yeah. My bad on that one.
San Jose's got to be second or
third. But anyway, so you got Florida on Tuesday. You got to take care of business in Florida. And remember, they've lost to Florida on home ice last year a couple times, if I'm not mistaken. There was one game, yep. I believe it was a Saturday afternoon game where they had played the night before. Florida was on the second half of a back-to-back, and they played terribly, and the Jets gave them the game. I don't remember exactly when it was, but there's been a couple games like that where the Jets have, you have to win.
It was an early November. It was a Thursday night game.
Okay, is that what
it was? And it was early November, and the Panthers beat the Jets 5-2.
Okay, you have to beat Florida at home, and you have to beat the Maple Leafs at home.
Yeah, you do, and you sit, 2-1 minimum, and that week after, which we'll obviously talk about next week, is where it gets a little bit scarier for Jets fans because you look at teams like behind them, look at the standings, and it's too early to look at the standings, and it is. But you can still acknowledge the fact that teams like the Rangers and Flyers are struggling, and they're eventually going to pass the Jets, in my opinion, and for sure the Rangers. I mean, you assume the Flyers will as well. So,
yep.
And the Jets have also played 8 games, right? No, many other teams haven't played more than 6 or 7. So, again, that's also a factor, and you got to take advantage. So, if you're a Jets fan, I don't blame you for being discouraged after this last 3-game stretch, and I realize there's ebbs and flows in a season. But we're 8 games into a 48-game season. And
I wouldn't be surprised if next Saturday we came on this broadcast and said, great week for the Winnipeg Jets.
We're 1/6 of the way through the season, and it's been a pretty awful beginning so far.
Well, and that's the problem, is that before you know it, you're 1/6 of the way through the season. Before you know it, you're 4/6 of the way through, and you might be out of it well before then.
Drew, it's obviously all about results. It's all about points. It's all about wins and losses. You want to get a point every single time you step on the ice. But as far as this team goes on the road, and Claude Noel knows this, Charlie Hyde knows this, the entire organization knows this, they have to play better on the road, and it's the way they carry themselves. It's about the way they've been taking penalties. It's all of that. This team, that has to change from last year. They're a good team at home, and they feed off of the MTS Center crowd, which they should. We've got the best fans in the entire NHL, but that attitude, that mentality, the way they play the system of Claude Noel, it's got to change. And when they got those points in Washington and Boston, it looked like things were changing, and then this road trip has kind of raised the doubts again.
Exactly right. Now we'll see how the Jets bounce back in the face of some adversity. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jesse Rogers is going to join us from ESPN Chicago. We're going to talk about the Blackhawks and their strong start. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We are going to be joined by Jesse Rogers of ESPN.com momentarily. In the meantime, might as well remind you, Wednesday night, 6 p.m., the debut of NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on this fine station. So be sure to tune in Wednesday night, 6 o'clock. Going to cover all the other 29 teams of the NHL in extreme detail. So that's a new regular Wednesday night show here on this station, and we look forward to bringing that to you.
Yeah, we're pumped up about that. We're getting lots of nice feedback from people on the station and also, you know, people on Twitter. We're really pumped up.
Oh, are you on Twitter, Ezzy? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I could tweet. Once in a while, I go on there and I do a couple things.
Okay.
Good retweets and favorites and all that good stuff.
Good to know. I think we're getting Jesse Rogers' answering machine, so Remus will keep working on getting him. We'll get him on for you momentarily as soon as we get a hold of him. Some afternoon hockey, of course. The Habs and the Sabres starting, I believe, right about now. It's the Habs always play the Saturday afternoon and then the Sunday afternoon Super Bowl Sunday game. Remember last year the Jets got blown out in that Super Bowl Sunday game to the Habs.
That's right.
Yeah. So fortunately, we don't have to play in that game this year.
Yeah, exactly right. Back to the NHL Midweek, Drew. Thanks for throwing it to me to allow me to comment. No, I'm I'm excited about the show. It's going to be interesting to kind of delve into. We have a couple of features we've been working on in terms of a weekly segments and delving deep into certain aspects of organizations and on-ice play. So we are looking forward to that to complement this show, and we're certainly thankful for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly right. Let's keep talking about the Jets until we're able to find Jesse Rogers.
Yep.
You know,
maybe he's in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. That's right.
Clever.
I'll have to bring that up when he's on.
Yeah, you do that. that was very clever. You know, you look at the Jets roster. Is it time for the team to really start making some wholesale changes to the roster for more than just, say, one game at a time? You know, Scheifele played last night. He replaced Wellwood in the lineup.
Yep.
You know, there's those two guys. They've been sort of back and forth. A guy like James Wright, you know, he's been in the lineup the whole time.
A couple of things on those comments. It's a good question, Drew. I think the first one is, like, why is Scheifele healthy scratching games and just either put him down already? I mean, you go back to Barry, and that's a fine plan, and I think that's the best plan for him. So get rid of that distraction. I mean, it's not a huge distraction for the team, I don't think, but, you know, let him just get into the groove and try and go for the Memorial Cup.
Good point.
In terms of the defense I mentioned before, when Byfuglien comes back, and I don't know how a guy gets injured when he's not playing hockey, but that's besides the point. I would pull a Klitsam, and I would shift around the, you know.
So Postma over Klitsam?
Well, you know what, again, Drew, you know what you got in Klitsam?
I think it's Redmond over Klitsam.
I think we're talking about, sorry, go on.
You know what you got in Klitsam? I mean, you got him off waivers, you've seen him in the NHL before. You know, Paul Postma, some people have their issues with him, and I understand that, and he hasn't looked great. But the guy's only played a few games in the NHL. You know, you don't, it's him a shot. You can't give him three games and say, you didn't play well, back to the minors, see you later. Give him a little shot, get comfortable. The game is fast. And, you know, let him work up to the speed and see how he handles himself. And also, he's a right-handed shot. So, without Bogosian in the lineup, you're going to keep Byfuglien and Enstrom together, I assume. And then you have Hainsey and Stewart, who are both lefties, left-handed shooting defensemen, and Redmond and Postma, who are both righties. So you split up Hainsey and Stewart, who played really well the first five games, have struggled a little bit more recently, and you know I would probably put Hainsey with Postma, try and offset. You know, Hainsey's a pretty good skater, and Postma moves around for his size, but isn't a great skater in my opinion. And then you move Redmond with Stewart. Redmond can move out there, and Stewart's not the best skater, so you complement him that way. Redmond can move the puck a bit. Hainsey and Postma can both move the puck a bit, but that's what I would do. I'd move out Klitsam, and I would move Scheifele down. Well, what is what he is. You knew what you were getting when you signed him. In terms of the fourth line, you know, I don't mind Drew bringing in a player or two from St. John's to kind of replace a guy.
Let me interrupt for a second. You're saying keep Postma and Redmond in the lineup and take Klitsam out.
Yep.
This team, you have to understand also something in the big picture. This team is very, very thin in terms of depth in the prospect system.
Yep.
You know, they have Scheifele, they have Trouba, you know, Adam Lowry.
But those Richie, I just want to step in here, though. Scheifele and Trouba, these are guys that have been both drafted in the first round. These are guys that you're going to build your team around 2 or 3 years from now, not now.
Well, but that's the point. So you want to get to see what your other young players are going to provide you, and you got to give them some time.
Yeah.
And there still is a developmental aspect to this. You know, you sign Ovechkin, you sign Ponikarovsky. This team is nowhere near Stanley Cup contender.
You didn't sign Ovechkin.
Sorry, Jokinen. I'm dreaming. Yeah. You sign Jokinen, you sign Ponikarovsky, and what happens is, in that case, is you have some veterans in the lineup, but maybe hold over for your youngsters. But at the same time, you need to see what you have in some of your youngsters. So I wouldn't mind bringing up a younger player, throw on the fourth line wing too. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Chris Thorburn and what he brings to the table in terms of off the ice. On the ice, he hasn't really done much this year. So I don't mind replacing him. You have Mietinen injured right now. I'm bringing up a guy in St. John's who could get a shot.
Well, why is James Wright still in the lineup, and a guy like, you know, Patrice Cormier, Spencer Mihacek haven't gotten their shot this year?
Well, okay,
why get Wright and Peluso off of waivers right before the start of the year? Aren't they relatively interchangeable with
different,
some of the guys in the AHL?
Well, they're different players, and I actually think this is what happened. The Antti Mietinen and Nikolai Antropov injuries during training camp created the need to sign those players in Chevy's mind, even though people were saying, well, why not give Spencer Mihacek or Patrice Cormier a chance? They obviously decided they'd rather use them in St. John's. But the problem that I have right now is, and again, I got to bring up Kyle Wellwood. The guy had a career year last year, and, you know, everybody is picking out his sore spots. I think he was one of the best forwards in those two games. And Kyle Wellwood, we know that he's not going to be hard on the puck. He's not going to be physical. But if you watch Kyle Wellwood, he's a very smart hockey player, and he rarely gives up the puck, even though a lot of guys on the Jets have been doing that, a lot of the rookies. And, you know, Mark Scheifele, we know the plan for him is to not keep him here this year. We know that. They're not going to make the playoffs. And a guy like James Wright, Drew, they're just giving him a look. They're trying to see, okay, he's on a two-way contract. They might put him down to St. John's and give Cormier or Mihacek a chance if he doesn't work out. Even though Wright stood up for his teammates, fought Scotty Upshaw, I like that James Wright did that. He's showing that, you know what, guys? I'm going to go the extra mile. I want to stay with the Jets.
That's fine. And I'm glad he dropped he stood up for his teammate and everything else. But at some point in time, it's a results-driven business, and I need to see some results from him.
Right, and
fighting Scotty Upshaw is not something that you can do on a nightly basis.
But you're throwing in Mark Scheifele, Kay, after you've scratched him for four games, which, if you're going to do that, you might as well just send him to Barrie. Kevin Cheveldayoff and Zinger, they have the reasons for what they're doing. They run the team. You know, it's just our job to talk about it. But we know that Mark Scheifele, the plan is long-term. It's to develop him. He might have to play in the AHL next year if he's not ready, and I think the world of Mark Scheifele. I think he's going to be a very good NHLer one day, but not right now. And I think if that's the plan, okay, but why are you taking, when you need points, you need a smart veteran hockey player in the lineup against a team like Tampa, why are you taking him out? I just thought, you know, people were saying it was the good opportunity to put Scheifele in. I disagree. He's coming in cold, hasn't played in four games, and you're putting him in there expecting to give you offense, but that's not what you need. So, again, I think the problems that the Jets have are not major. I think the players that they have just have to play better.
Look, I don't think that flip-flopping Scheifele and Wellwood is a long-term solution, but I also don't think that Kyle Wellwood has done anything to deserve a regular spot in this lineup. With all due respect to you and your opinion of him, I think Kyle Wellwood has been invisible and relatively useless, as a player for the Jets so far this year.
I don't think he's been useless. I think he hasn't gotten the results. He only has 1 point in six games. But I think the problems that the Jets have are much bigger than one or two players. I think it's the way the team performs on a night-in, night-out basis.
When he's on the line, I think that they're playing forward-wise. I think there's two legitimate scoring threats on the ice when he's playing, simply because he doesn't have a shot, and he's not going to. It has to be an absolutely perfect play for Kyle Wellwood to be a real threat.
He's a good passer and he has good vision.
Yeah.
But when they're moving up the ice and they're cutting this and this way and that on the line that he's playing with, they can create some chances. The problem, of course, you have is he hasn't forecheck, he's not getting along the boards, and he's not a shooter. So those are the drawbacks of his game. And you knew that when you signed him, so you shouldn't be surprised.
Tell you what, Jesse Rogers is on the phone. Let's go to break, and then when we come back, we'll have Jesse for an entire segment. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from ESPNChicago.com, Jesse Rogers. Jesse, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Thank you very much. Jesse, the Chicago Blackhawks are probably off to, if not the best start in the NHL, certainly right up there in terms of the standings. You know, what in your estimation, what has been the main reason behind the Blackhawks' tremendous start to the season?
Well, as you'd imagine, there's several ones. I don't think you can pinpoint one. I think they've had a perfect storm in a sense because they kind of had a bad year last year, bad finish, because they didn't turn over their roster, because they have a lot of road games to start the season. I think they were really focused and ready to go, probably more than most teams. You know, it only takes a little bit of an edge to separate yourself in this kind of a short training camp, shortened season. So I think the shortened season and the short training camp actually did them good compared to other teams. They'll hit a rut, as will San Jose and some of the other teams off to fast start. But when you start with so many road games, 10 out of 12, six in a row right now, you better do something, because I think Eddie Olczyk, the Blackhawks announcer, said it right to me the other day on the radio. He said, you know, you can basically miss the playoffs in this first month. You can't make it, but you can miss it if you dig yourself a hole. And I think the Blackhawks, because of that, because of a bad finish to last season, I think they were just really focused and ready to go. And you have to have some good fortune when you get, you know, points in your first eight games. And they've had a couple bounces go their way, but of course you have to be in a position to take advantage, and they've done that as well.
Jesse, to me, Patrick Kane looks like, you know, the Patrick Kane of 2009, just flying around out there and, you know, acting like one of the best offensive players in the NHL. Do you think Patrick Kane, so far this season, is taking another step forward in his hockey career?
I don't know. We've seen this before. I've seen him have great starts before and kind of, slow down once you get to the dog days. Now, maybe there won't be dog days during this season, or maybe there will be one when they hit the 24-25 game mark. Who knows? Now, he was playing in Switzerland, so that got him ready. I don't know. I think that the jury's still out. He still might end up being just a great playmaker and a 25-30 goal scorer. Maybe he has that one season where he pops for 90 to 100 points in a regular 82-game year. But I'm not so sure we've seen him take another step necessarily. 80 points is still pretty darn good. Or 48 into 48. You know, if you can average one per game, that's good. If you want to average 1.5 to 2 or whatever it is, that's where you become one of those elites. And I'm not sure he can get there. I'm not sure he will. But he is streaky, as is a guy like Marian Hossa. So once we kind of think, oh, God, he's off to an MVP-type year, they sometimes come back down to earth. So let me see if he'll do it for 48 before I say that he's taking another step.
Jesse, there's no question that this team has top-end talent, both on the back end and a forward. But my concern with the team of the past couple of years even has been after that. It just seemed like there's a bunch of pieces, but they don't really meld together that well. Are they starting to, I mean, I don't know if you agree with that, first of all, but if you do, do you think that they're starting to kind of find their place?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I still think the general manager, Stan Bowman, is trying to find that right combination of high-priced talent to go along with minimum-type guys, you know. When you keep a core together of Kane, Taves, Keith, Seabrook, you know, to go on and on, Hossa, that's a pretty larger than usual core, which means a lot of money is in those guys, which means there's not a lot left over in the cap world for the lower end guys. You have to do a good job of scouting. And I think let's say Victor Stahlberg, that's the guy they got for Chris Versteeg after they won the championship. That's a good job of scouting. Now, he's still growing, but he had a breakout year last year. Finally getting power play time. So if that continues, he'll really put up some good numbers. My point being, when you can only spend $1,500,000, $1,500,000 on role players, you better get the right ones. Because otherwise you're stuck. Unless you trade one of those $6-7 million guys, and that's changing the makeup of your team. So I think it's still a work in progress. I think they do have a good prospect pool that they will work from over the next year or two. A guy like Marcus Kruger, who came over from Europe last year, and he's kind of grown into his role now as a third line type of center and a good penalty killer. So the answer question is yes, I think so, but it's still a work in progress.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com. He's covering the Blackhawks. Jesse, one of the players that people in Winnipeg that are quite familiar with is Johnny Oduya. Obviously, the Blackhawks acquired him at the trade deadline last season. You know, how has he fit in Chicago so far this year?
Well, he fits their style. He fit their style last year. He kind of faded in the playoffs, but he's fitting well. He fits their style. He might be a little undersized, but mobile, a good first pass out of the zone type of player. Not probably not the the greatest shot. He had some power play time last year after he won a game, I think, with a nice shot. But really probably not a great power play guy, probably not even a great penalty kill guy necessarily, but solid for their system. I think he's more valuable to them than he would be for other guys at his age and stuff. So I'd say he's fitting nicely. But I don't think he necessarily is a top, let's say, three guy. Maybe he can be four on some given nights. But I think he probably fits in best at five. And that's kind of how they use him, as a four or five type of guy.
Jesse, I want to talk to you about Nick Leddy. A couple of years ago when he broke into the NHL, he's a first-round pick of the Minnesota Wild, and he was traded for Cam Barker. Pardon me. You know, at certain points when he came into the league, I thought he looked like the second coming of Phil Housley, and then he struggled again last year. How have you seen the change in his play from last year to this year, even though it's early?
Well, it's a similar play when he's good. He looks about the same. He's confident. He'll take the puck from end to end, as you mentioned, like Housley or Brian Campbell, who played for the Hawks and helped win a championship. The thing that happened last year is he faded, and you just don't know if the 82-game grind got to him, and that could be the case for such a young guy. He's probably a year ahead of schedule in terms of making the NHL at 19, 20, and playing as many games as he did. So I think he hit a wall early last year after having a great start. So now with the short schedule, even though it's compacted, maybe he doesn't hit that wall because he's just not playing as many games. Or maybe he turns the corner and he can handle all the minutes and games. So I think it's just a matter of probably just getting more games, more minutes under his belt, maturing, understanding how to take care of himself, and then getting to the next level, because he will carry that puck. You know, Quinville used him in the shootout last night, which I think was the first time ever, and he looked pretty nervous and missed, and they lost the game because of it. So it's obvious, though, when a coach taps you for the shootout, there's something going on in his mind that I've got confidence in this guy. And I think you're seeing it a little bit during the regular, regular part of the game. But, again, he's got to sustain it. He really faded last year, and we'll see what happens this year.
Corey Crawford, Jesse, is obviously always a talking point for Blackhawks fans. Last year in the playoffs, certainly struggled. This year the Hawks are off to a nice start. Are they going to hitch their wagon to him, or are they going to look to add a netminder before, as they go down the stretch?
Well, you're always looking, but it's not that easy to find one. You have to find one that's definitively better, that will fit in. You trade for a goaltender, a starting goaltender at the deadline, and his name's not one of the elite ones. The elite ones aren't available most of the time. So even if you get a good one, there's a lot of pressure on a new goaltender to come in at the trade deadline. So you have to make sure he's definitively better. I'm going to say, I've been saying all along, and if he has a good year, I'm going to say to people, I told you so. There's nothing in Corey Crawford's game that says he can't rebound and have a good year. He's physically, big. His technique is fine. His technique's extremely solid. He probably needs mentally to mature a little bit. And you wonder if last year would have helped. There are plenty of goaltenders that have had sophomore slumps and recovered. At recent vintage, Jonathan Quick, Jimmy Howard. You could go on and on about really good goaltenders that had good rookie years, sophomore slumps, and came back. I mean, it's obvious reasons. When you're unexpectedly, have success, nobody is giving you, those big expectations or pressure on you. Then you come back as that entrenched starter. It's tough. You're playing a lot more games than you ever did, and sometimes you falter. So my big thing is I just never saw anything in his game to say that he could not rebound and have a good year. There was no guarantee, but it looks like mentally he has progressed. He's forgetting about bad goals and bad games, which he admittedly said it stayed with him. So I think to answer your question, I think, yes, for the moment they've hitched their wagon because they don't see any reason not to, and you don't just have an elite guy waiting in the wings.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jesse Rogers of ESPNChicago.com discussing the Chicago Blackhawks. Jesse, here in Winnipeg, we have a team with a penalty kill that's less than 60% success rate, so we can always appreciate good penalty killing, and the Blackhawks so far this year have been blessed with that, with a penalty kill rate over 96% of the time being successful. Why has the Blackhawks penalty killing been so good so far this year?
Well, I could give you technical reasons and stuff, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to say, it's good this year because it was so bad last year. And that could be two reasons because of that. One, that's what happens in special teams one year to the next. They reverse themselves sometimes. But more likely, the reason they reverse themselves is because you recommit to it. They did not block shots last year, did not get in shooting lanes, did not move people out in front of their goaltender to get the screens out or for the rebounds. I mean, Corey Crawford was inundated last year because he had none of that going on. He didn't have block shots at the point. He didn't have guys moving people out so he could see the puck. And he didn't have, he had rebounds to deal with. So they recommitted themselves. Quinville last year at the end of the year basically said, even if it comes down to my stars, if they don't earn it on the PK, they're not going to be there. And Marian Hossa is a great example. Last year, he would not get in front of a shot. This year, he's getting in the shooting lanes. And they've got guys like Marcus Kruger and Michael Frolik who are more role players willing to commit themselves. And you don't want to start blocking a shot necessarily all the time, but just get in the lane to misdirect the shot a little bit. And we're seeing the Stars do that, where last year they didn't do it. For whatever reason, they just didn't do it, and now they're doing it.
Jesse, we've got one more question for you here. I watched the Blackhawks-Canucks game and was really, focusing on Brandon Saad. He's playing on the top line beside Jonathan Toews. He doesn't have any points so far, but he's got great speed, and I was really impressed with the way he's playing. How would you rate his play thus far, notwithstanding the fact he hasn't put up any points on the board?
Yeah, getting better. You saw probably his best game of the year last night. You probably saw a great move to the slot where he got taken down and drew a penalty. That's the kind of stuff he can do. I saw an aggressiveness out of him last night and in recent play that maybe he didn't see right away, and that's expected. He's put on the line with Toews and Hossa, and he might have been a little timid, but he has great size. He's got an NHL body. He had it a year or two ago at such a young age, and I think he's going to grow into his role. It is not easy to be put into that top six with that talent, but you just have to be confident in your job because, obviously, the coaches and even your teammates have shown confidence in you, and I thought that was his best game. He was aggressive. He's a guy that knows where the net is, and whether it's goal scoring or playmaking, he knows what to do with it. Now he just has to let his ability take over. So, yeah, there's a lot of upside there. Probably go through some growing pains, but you saw some growth last night, no doubt. One of the better forwards on the ice, in my opinion.
Jesse Rogers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for ESPNChicago.com. He's actually transitioning to cover the Chicago Cubs. Do you need anybody to come down with you to spring training? We are willing to volunteer ourselves.
If I had a nickel for everybody that's asked me that, I'm actually leaving this Thursday, if you can believe that.
Wow, yeah.
It's actually also the day the Hawks play the Phoenix Coyotes, so I'm going to go work that game and then hit the ground running with the Cubs. It's a really long spring training because of this World Baseball Classic. So, I could use some help for 7 weeks. I don't know if anyone's going to pay you, but I could use the help.
That's okay. We don't need money just to get away from winter. We'll struggle in Phoenix for 7 weeks, as you said.
Lots of pretzels and hot dogs.
Why not, right? As long as you're in the sun, right?
Exactly. Jesse, thanks very much, as always, for joining us today.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com. Let's go to break. When we come back, Sean Fitzgerald from the National Post is going to join us. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.